Om sahana bhavatu, sahana bhunaktu, saha viryam karavavahai, tejasvina vatitamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti.
Okay, well, verse 239. Grihito brahmano mlechaihi, grihito brahmano mlechaihi, prayas chittam charan punaha, prayas chittam charan punaha, mlechai sakiryate naiva, mlechai sakiryate naiva, tatha basa sharirakaihi, tatha basa sharirakaihi. Grihitaha brahmanaha mlechaihi prayas chittam charan punaha mlechaihi sankiryate naiva tata basaha sharirakaihi. Okay, in this section now, I started it last week, and this section is really giving a lot of examples and unfoldment about really the nature of the chittabhasa. And what happens to the chittabhasa, that so-called reflection of consciousness, once one gains knowledge, once one recognizes the Atma as Brahman, that yourself is changeless, yourself is infinite, yourself is free of all of the shariras, the body, the subtle body, the gross body, the causal body, that your being is free from that. Once you recognize that, that in fact is the nature of the self, the chittabhasa recognizes that. The chittabhasa itself recognizes that. The so-called reflection of consciousness recognizes it. So what does that chittabhasa go through once it gains knowledge? So as we go through these verses, we're going to really be sitting with exactly what the chittabhasa is, so you can recognize the concept. Because the concept is a little evasive, the idea of this reflection of consciousness. So Vidyaranya is working with this in actually a really nice way. By the time we're done with it, you really know what the chittabhasa is, I think. At least I will. So here he gives another example. Remember, the last week's example was about the poor harlot who has leprosy in her private parts. How? No, honestly, the harlot who has leprosy in her private parts, how she would be shy to be shy in reference to displaying all of her charms, you know, like all of her flirtations and charms toward a person who knows that she has the leprosy. She wouldn't feel like displaying that type of flirtatiousness or pride or seductivity, being so seductive, in front of somebody who knows. Similarly, he says, the chittabhasa would feel shy to brag and to flaunt all of their accomplishments, you know, in front of the chittabhasa, in front of somebody who knows. So for the jnani, you know, the one who knows really who the self is, who I am, the truth of myself, the chittabhasa no longer feels like, no longer has that ownership or that sense of superiority or that sense of ego. The ego of the chittabhasa is quite, I wouldn't say deflated, just brought down to size. The ego now fits the chittabhasa, rather than the ego being something that imbues in the chittabhasa the atma, the self. Right? See the difference? I mean, it's a huge difference. So now the chittabhasa recognizes the self that I am as the self in all beings, and in fact every vibhuti that there is only Ishvara. And so that ego identity, that what we call that manitvam, bragging about all of my accomplishments, that sense isn't there. The chittabhasa is actually deflated, and what is exalted now is the Atma, which is Brahman, which is the self of Ishvara. So that chittabhasa loses that feeling of arrogance or pride, or more showing off. So here, he gives another example. He says, just as a brahmana, from the brahmana caste, just as when a brahmana is grihita, is grasped or touched by mlechas. Mlechas are intouchables, by untouchables. So say a brahmana is actually touched, you know, or grabbed by a group of untouchables, then prayas chittam charan, then what doing prayas chitta, then that brahmana has to do prayas chitta, has to do certain karmas in order to repurify himself or herself. And that's just part of the kind of the Vedic tradition. A mlecha is somebody who's outside. It's outside of the Vedic tradition, and so they don't know all of the ways of the Veda. They don't know the Dharma, the Adharma. They don't know the rituals. They're not part of the system. And so if you find yourself being touched by a mlecha, an untouchable doesn't really, it means they are outside of the system. So if they touch you, you actually have to do some karmas to purify yourself from that. If they touch you, you have to go take a bath and do various chants and whatnot. You remember in the Manisha Panchakam, the introduction, when Shankara is walking along the road with his entourage and some mlecha, Chandala comes up and it threatens to touch him. Shankara might have to brush next to him, and so Shankara just goes, gacha, gacha, you know, move, 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 go, go, go. You know, because if the mlecha touches him, then he has to go through all this purificatory rites. And so when he does that, actually Lord Shiva had appeared as the untouchable, just to test Shankara. You know, and so when Shankara says to him, gacha, gacha, Shiva says, who are you asking to go? Are you asking the body to go, the flesh to go from the flesh, or this to go from that? What exactly are you asking to go here? Can consciousness go from consciousness? Is the consciousness that I am different than the consciousness you are? Or are you talking about the flesh, moving away from the flesh? What exactly do you mean? And so he gives a couple of verses that kind of unfold the vision. And then from those verses on, Shankara says, you know, anybody who can teach me like this, let that person be my guru, whether he's a mlecha or whether he's a brahmana, doesn't matter. So I think that keeping that famous story in mind, Vidyaranya is saying, if a brahmana is touched by mlechas, then doing the purificatory rites, because now you have to go and do all of this, it's a pain, you have to do all of this, then punaha, again, mlechaihi sankirigate, again he's not going to go up to the mlechas, you know, and touch them and mix with them, right? Because then he'll just have to, once again, go and do the purificatory rites. So, once that's happened, he's going to do the rites, but not is going to, you know, remove himself. He's not just going to run up to them again, so then again have to do the rites. So he says, that's Vidyaranya's example. Then he says, tatha, similarly, the basaha, basaha means the chirabasa, that reflection of consciousness, sharirakaihi, is not going to mix itself with the shariras, with the physical body, with the subtle body, with the causal body. It's not going to touch those in the sense of touch those, become identified with those. Because if it does, then it's just going to have to extract itself again. So now, this is interesting. This is, again, talking about the chittabhasa and trying to get kind of a Vidyaranya's vision of it. We're going to go through a few verses here about this. Again, with the drip drisha viveka, in the very beginning verses, you look at a vritti, any given vritti, as being five components. Nama rupa, the name and form, and then the sat chit ananda. Just take nama rupa, name and form, and sat chit. Sat chit means this, that every vritti that you have, that vritti exists, the objects in the vritti enjoy existence, and the vritti is known. Any vritti. In fact, all of your experience, this is true. You have the name and form, you've got the creation, whatever you're experiencing. And that, and so you have the name and form, and then you have as the constant the existence and the knownness of the name and form. The existence, the beingness and the knownness remains constant. The names and forms go on changing. But you can't even conceive of a vritti or a thought modification without existence and consciousness. See that? Without existence and knownness. So if you think of it in terms of knownness, it works well. Every thought that you have, because it enjoys consciousness, we'll say it reflects consciousness. Because it reflects consciousness, it is known. Now, the reason that they say reflects consciousness is because consciousness itself is the very, it's the clay of the pot. It's the very being of the vritti. It's the very being of the names and forms of the vritti. But from the standpoint of the vritti, from the standpoint of those names and forms, right, the names and forms are known. Right? They enjoy the stature of being known. Right? You see that? So from the standpoint of the vritti, there's a knownness and a beingness that the vritti is enjoying. From the standpoint of the consciousness existence, consciousness is not conscious of anything. It's the consciousness itself is not knowing the vritti. If you take away the vritti, there's just consciousness, right? There's just existence, consciousness. It's not performing an act. So from the standpoint of just the sat-chit, there is no known vritti. The known vritti is there only from the standpoint of the vritti itself. What we want to do, what we tend to want to do, is put the knowership of the vritti onto the Atma. So the Atma, the self, becomes the one because of whom the vritti is known, which makes me the Atma, the knower of the vritti. See what I mean? So then the knowership belongs to the Atma, and then the vritti is known. But in fact, knowership doesn't belong to consciousness. Consciousness is not a knower, it's just consciousness. So the me, your sense of me, is not a me that is performing an act of knowing something, but because it is consciousness, if the vritti is there, that vritti, the maya vritti, is enjoying the consciousness from its own standpoint. That's what we call the reflection of consciousness. Now, if you get rid of the vritti is mithya. If you get rid of the vritti, right, it's consciousness that never was a knower is still not a knower and is still very much there. See, consciousness is not participating in this act of knowing. It's just that because of consciousness, the mind, when it is there, can reflect the consciousness. You understand it? So now there's two things happening. I want you to one is the chittabhasa, one is me. The me is just the conscious being, me, my sense of self, that is there as the constant, not knowing anything, just pure consciousness, which is being. This is discernible. Through viveka, you can recognize your own self, which is not performing any function at all. Then there is the sense of knowership that we also have, which is due to the knownness of the vritti. There's a sense of knowership because since the vritti is known, the ahankara, the I notion, will come and identify with the consciousness, the existence and the consciousness which the vritti is enjoying, right? Because the vritti is known, so the ahankara is not going to identify with the known object, it's only going to identify with the consciousness, which will be the knower of the known object from the standpoint of the vritti. You see what I'm saying? So it's a little fuzzy, but I actually can see what he's talking about here. So the vritti which is known is only known because of consciousness. But without the vritti, there isn't any consciousness that is behaving as a knower. with the vritti, the ahankara labeling the sat chit in the vritti, which we call the reflection of consciousness, labeling it as me, right? That becomes what we call the chittabhasa. So now, in your experience right now, you can say, and it's true also, you know, I know you, I see this, I'm a knower. Also, whatever affects I have in the punya, papa, sukha, dukkha, I'm an enjoyer of all of those, and bhokta, I'm an enjoyer of all of those affects. Atma is not a bhokta. The me, the sense of self, is not going through any type of enjoyment at all. It just simply is stable being. But from the standpoint of the vritti, because the vritti enjoys knownness, it is illumined, whatever affect is there in the vritti is being experienced. Right? The vritti is there. The vritti is being experienced because the vritti is there. And so what allows for the being experienced of the vritti? That's the chittabhasa. Now, that chittabhasa that allows you to say the vritti is known, I am the knower of the vritti, the chittabhasa is what allows that. That chittabhasa also is always the same. Because the chittabhasa identifies itself with sat-chit, right? The knower of the vritti, the enjoyer of the vritti, it is only identifying with sat-chit. So the chittabhasa also isn't changing, but then it's always in relationship to whatever is the content of the vritti. And so now, this is how Vijayaranya is seeing this. So now, he's saying, this chittabhasa now has recognized, you know, I am, just think as the ahankara, I am the chittabhasa, as the chittabhasa, I, the ahankara, the ahankara, I am the atma. The truth of myself, put it this way, the truth of myself is Brahman. Is the Atma. The chittabhasa recognizes that. It also recognizes as the knower, as the enjoyer, I am not changing. There's a subject-object relationship between myself as the knower of the vritti, or the knower of the name and form, the knower of the emotion. I'm also not changing. I'm not going to be taking on the nature of those things that I know. And so the chittabhasa itself recognizes its stability, its changelessness. And so what does it do? Now, when it's seeing all of the problems that the mind is having, because it knows, right? It's all the problems the mind is having, all the problems the body has, you know, all of the problems that are caused by agnana, by the causal body, it says, you know what? I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to grab on. Grahita means to grab. So here they have the mlechas coming. The brahmana has mlechas coming and grabbing on. I'm not going to grab on to this. I'm not going to let that happen. I'm not going to identify in that way. I'm going to stick with the atma. I'm not going to let myself get contaminated by identification or grabbing on to all of these objects of experience. Starting to follow? It'll become a little clearer as we go on. Okay. This is Vijayaranya. I mean, there's this only place, I think, where this chittabhasa is really dealt with in this way. Okay. Otherwise, it doesn't get much attention. So. So let's look at some more of these. Yavaraje stito raja, yavaraje stito raja, putra samraja vanchaya, putra samraja vanchaya, rajanukari bhavati, rajanukari bhavati, tata sakshat nukari yayam,
Tata Sarcha Nukariyam.
Yalva Raja Stitaha Rajaputraha Samraja Vanchaya. Raja Anukari Bhavati Tata Sakshi Anukari Ayam. He says, again, just as a Rajaputraha, just as a prince, the son of a king, Raja's king, Putra's son. So just as a Rajaputraha, the son of a king, Stittaha is standing there, is remaining as a Yavaraja, as one who is heir apparent. The Yavaraja is the youth who is going to gain the kingdom. So Yavaraja, it just translates as heir apparent. He's going to inherit the kingdom. So he's staying there. That's his position now. He's one who's going to be inheriting the whole kingdom. And that prince, Samraja Vanchaya, Vanchaya means with a desire. For the Samraja. Samraja means an empire. So this prince, he is here as the heir apparent, and he has a desire, you know, to be the heir apparent. He has a desire to, for the kingdom, for the Samraja. So now what does he do? He becomes Raja Anukari. He becomes somebody who is a Raja Anukari. Means he imitates or follows after the king. He walks in the king's footsteps. Anukari means to imitate or to follow behind. So he imitates, he walks in the footsteps of the king. He imitates the king. Now that's the example. Similarly, Sakshi Anukari Ayam. This person, this Chirabhasa, becomes somebody who follows behind, follows in the footsteps, imitates as though the Sakshi. The Sakshi means here the Atma. And so all it means really is that here you are in this creation. You have this body, mind, sense organs. Because you have a mind, that mind will always reflect awareness. Because it's there, it's settled, it's sattva. So always the mind is going to be reflecting awareness. Now you have a choice, the ahankara has a choice, of identifying with the awareness, the awareful being, with the nama-rupa, means all of the contents that are taking place in the mind, all of the moods, all of the emotions, all of the perceptions, identifying with the body, identifying with the subtle body, identifying with everything that the upadis can possibly identify. And you have that choice, you know, but the ahankara can go that way, because the ahankara, remember, the ahankara, the I notion, is always identifying with the sat-chit and the vritti. The ahankara doesn't identify with an object. It only identifies with an object if it has identified the consciousness as one with that object. So the ahankara always is identified with sat-chit, consciousness, the awareness, the awareful being. And then its problem is that it identifies the awareful being with the nama-rupa, with the names and forms of nivritti. So the I am is the stable part of the ahankara, of the I notion. So I am, but then the I am is very much associated with whatever is in the vritti. Right? Because of the vritti, because the vritti is there, that vritti itself enjoys consciousness existence. So the ahankara identifies only with the sat-chit, and then identifying with the sat-chit then lassoes it, that sat-chit, with the experience. So now here, once the ahankara recognizes that the sat-chit that the vritti is enjoying is the atma, is only the atma, now that chidabhasa, that consciousness which is in reference to the vritti, now follows Now, instead of following the vritti, the names and forms of the vritti only relates to itself, to the Atma. Let me tell you how I remember how I experienced, how I actually came to recognize this in my own psyche. Normally when, for an Ajnani, when the I thought arises, I am, which comes all of the time, I am. It comes, I am, and then it's going to land somewhere. Where does it land? Usually it lands, you know, say if there's an emotion, the I thought comes, I am, and then it'll land on, I am sad, or I am agitated, or I am so happy, or I am tired, or I am sick. It will land, it'll come, the I am, me, the conscious me, will come and then always dress itself with one of the upadis, either with the body, a condition of the body, with the mind, a condition of the mind. And you can just watch this, just watch. You just try to slow down your experience, watch the I am come up and land. Continually comes up and it lands. Even it comes up and lands on your relationships, you know. And wherever it can land, it will land. Now, what about when the I am thought rises, right? Because every vritti has sat-chit, and so the ahankara, which is also a vritti, is going to always be coming, identifying with the sat-chit aspect, but then landing on an upadi, whatever the upadi is. What about when the ahankara comes, you know, which says, I am, which is a vritti. There's the chittabhasa right there. It's, even if it says I am, there's a vritti there. It can't say I am. So there you have your chittabhasa. Now, what if that chittabhasa, instead of landing on the upadi, like your mind or your moods or your emotions or your body, instead of landing there, it lands on the atma. I am Brahman, you know. I am consciousness. I am sat-chit. So what if it's now identification? What if the one that it's tagging along, the ahankara, is tagging along now, imitating, following along the consciousness, relating itself to the conscious being, relating itself to Brahman, rather than relating itself to the upadis? You see how that is?
Mm-hmm.
That's what happens. So here it says like a king who wants to, like a prince, you know, who has a desire for the kingdom, you know, is going to follow in the footsteps of the king. Here the ahankara should follow in the footsteps of the self. Right? It's following in the footsteps of the self. It's tagging along. It's always identifying itself with the self, not with something else. And who is the self? The self? The self that is known, the Atma, which is Brahman. And so this is actually, I think, I mean, it's really a nice example. So it follows, it's always following along, identified with the Sakshi, not with the things that the Sakshi illumines. What the Sakshi, and what are you going to identify in terms of what the Sakshi illumines? Is the upadis. Upadis means all the conditioning agents. You'll identify with the physical body and its qualities, or you'll identify with the mind and its qualities, its moods, its emotions, its skills, the body, its health or sickness, the sense organs, whether they're functioning well or not. All these are points of identification. So instead of following along after them, the ahankara follows along after the atma. So, because that's what it wants to be. That, you know, for the mumukshu, just think about it. For the mumukshu, the one who's trying to gain self-knowledge, what do you want to be? Do you want to be Brahman? Or do you want to be a samsari? Now, seriously, do you want to be a samsari? Or do you want to be Brahman? So this is what this is exactly what he does in this next verse. So let's look at this. He reminds us this. Yo Brahmaveda Brahmaiva. Yo Brahmaveda Brahmaiva. Bhavadyeva iti shrutihi. Bhavadyeva iti shrutihi. Shrutva tareka chittasan. Shrutva tareka chittasan. Brahmaveti na chetaret. Brahmaveti na chetaret. Yaha Brahma Veda Brahmaiva Bhavati Eva Iti Shrutihi Shrutva Tad Eka Chittaha San Brahmaveti Echetarat Nacha Itarat. He says, he quotes a famous verse from the Mundaka, Yaha Brahma Veda Brahmaiva Bhavati. The one, Yaha, the one who Veda knows Brahman, the one who knows Brahman, that one becomes Brahman. The one who knows Brahman becomes Brahman. Because you recognize I am Brahman. The only thing that's separating you from Brahman is ignorance. You, in fact, are Brahman. So once you know Brahman, you don't have to do anything to become Brahman, because you know, you recognize that the self that you are is Brahman. So the one who knows Brahman becomes Brahman. Not that he wasn't or she wasn't Brahman before, but you become Brahman from the standpoint of the mind which previously had thought that you weren't Brahman. So once you know Brahman, you become Brahman. Another way of saying, once you know Brahman, you recognize that you are Brahman. That's what they're saying. That's a nice way of saying it. Once you know Brahman, the one who knows Brahman becomes Brahman. Become Brahman because you recognize I am Brahman. That's what, to know Brahman. In fact, to know Brahman, you have to recognize I am Brahman. If you don't recognize I am Brahman, you don't know Brahman. So, and in fact, just think about this. If you don't recognize Brahman as I am Brahman, then Brahman must be an object which you know. If Brahman is an object which you know, then there's a subject-object relationship between you and Brahman is limited because other than you, right? So to know Brahman is to recognize I am Brahman. So here, and that's a very famous verse. So iti shrutihi, thus this verse from the Shruti, from the Mundaka. So shrutva, having known this, shrutva means having heard, means by having heard, when we use the word shru, to hear, in the context of the Vedas, shravana is the listening to the Vedas. The Vedas are called the Shruti, because the Vedas are revealed knowledge, and they need to be heard. Right? The Vedas are something that need to be heard by you. The Shruti is considered revealed knowledge, revealed from Bhagavan, from the Lord. So, having heard means having been taught. You say shrutva. Having been taught this, having understood, so shrutva, inclinable past participle, tad ekachittaha san, that person being ekachittaha means the mind now has become single-pointed on that. Eka means one. So the mind has become single-pointed on that, recognizing that Brahman. So being one who is single-pointed on that, has recognized it, brahmaveti, that person knows Brahman, nacha, and nothing else. That person, Brahma, being one who's single-pointed, means having understood that, which is one, then that person, brahmaveti, knows Brahman, nacha, itarat, and not another, not anything else. He's taking a little farther here. It's nice. Let me just tell you how the Bhasha introduces this verse. He brings in the Bhasha, he brings like a doubt. Here's the doubt. He says, you know, for in the following of the king for the prince is following now, following in the footsteps of the king, imitating the king, you know, following after the king, doing whatever the king does. In that, we see that there's a great pala. The great pala, the great fruit in doing that is this tremendous empire that the prince is going to gain by following in the footsteps of the king. He will have this, he will gain this tremendous empire. Then he says, but we don't see that in following the sakshi. What's there to gain? And what's the pala? This is the doubt. What pala is there? What result is there? You know, if the chittabhasa follows in the footsteps of the sakshi, is imitating the sakshi, only going toward the sakshi and not toward, you know, the samsara in a sense, not toward the body, not toward the mind, not toward all of the all of the things that I can gain from the world, but rather always just resolving in the sakshi, following along in the sakshi. What's the gain? So he says like that. Therefore, it goes, in the following of the sakshi, what is the pravritti? He says, katam pravartate. What is the impetus? What impels him to do that? There should be some great result, you know, from doing it. Now, so here, then he quotes the whole verse. The verse goes like this. Sayaha havai tat paraman brahma veda brahmaiva bhavati. He says, the one who knows Brahman, which is Tat Paramam, the most supreme, that supreme Brahman, that one knows Brahman, that one becomes Brahman alone. Then he goes, Na asya Brahmavit Kule Bhavati, a Brahmavit Kule Bhavati. For that person is never, will never be born in a family of Abrahmavits, people who do not know Brahman. That person, Tadati Shokam, that person crosses sorrow, tadati shokam. That person, tadati papmanam, crosses all sin, all papa, crosses over to the other side of papa, crosses over to the other side of dukkha, of sorrow. Then guha granti bhyaha vimuktaha. That person becomes liberated from the knot of the heart. The knot of the heart is the ahankara's identification with the upadhi, right? And that's what the heart is, the buddhi, right? And there's a knot between the atma and the body. There's a knot between the atma and the upadhis. The ahankara is the knot. The knot is caused by ajnanam, by ignorance, where the mind then says, you know, I am the body and therefore I will die, you know? I am the mind, and then I'm on the roller coaster ride of sukha and dukkha. That knot of the heart is the ahankara's identification of the atma with the conditioning adjuncts, with the upadhis. That's what they call a knot. That knot of the heart is cut. Mm. It's cut so that now the ahankara no longer identifies with the upadhis, but rather identifies only with the atma. Like the ahankara comes home to the self. So the ahankara is no longer a product of ignorance. What caused the ahankara to identify with the upadis, the body, mind, sense organs, all of these things, is ajnanam. So the ahankara, ignorance, so the ahankara actually is a product of ignorance. Now when the ignorance is removed, the ahankara is still there. It will be there, and this is a verse that we'll do in a minute. It'll be there as long as the upadhi is there. The body, mind, sense organ is there. It's going to be there as long as the prarabdha karmas that caused you to take this body go all the way to the end of the prarabdha karma. It will be there. So the ahankara is always going to be there because there will continue to be the experience of knowership, of doership, of enjoyership, because of the reflection of consciousness in the chittabhasa, which has a body, mind, sense organ, so this will always be there. It's not like you gain knowledge and all of a sudden there's no knowership. You gain knowledge, no enjoyership. Gain knowledge, you can't see the world. That's not so. So since those things are there, you know, those experiences are there, you're going to have an I thought that differentiates you from your experience, subject-object. So the ahankara will still be there. But the ahankara is there and functional, but there's no ajnanam to cause the ahankara to take the body, the mind, the sense organs, the upadis, to be anything other than upadis. They are conditioning adjuncts, they are not me. And so for the ahankara, its truth, its self, is the atma. And so for the ahankara, when the ahankara arises, it sets in the atma. Right? Even while it's saying, I am doing this, I am doing that, that's just speech. That's vyavahara. That's talking normally in vyavahara. So you don't walk around saying, you know, I'm really not the body, the body is walking. I'm really not the mind, the mind is thinking, the mind is feeling, the mind is doing this. I'm always the same. Can you imagine walking around trying to function in that way? In fact, Vidyaranya says, you only talk like this when you're teaching. Otherwise, please. You know, just talk like a normal person. We know that you know. We know that you know. Now talk like a normal person. So when you say, I am thinking, you know that the mind is thinking and that yourself is the Atma is not thinking. That you have that knowledge. Right? Experiential knowledge. It's not just intellectual. You recognize the stability of yourself. That is you. And that's who the ahankara, that's the self of the ahankara. The ahankara is totally awake to that. And at the same time, I know you. Same time, I am talking to you. You are listening to me. That is all taking place at the same time. But it's all taking place within knowledge. So that's the guha granti biha vimuktaha. Hridya, the guha is the hridya. Same as guha grantihi. Same as hridya grantihi. The guha is the buddhi. And that person, amritaha bhavati, that person is amritaha, immortal, free from death. Because the atma never changes. The atma doesn't come into being or go out of being. The self that you are is the self that you are. It's free from time. So the conscious me that you are is never not been and never will not be. And so the mind basks and revels in that stability, actually. The ahankara revels in that stability because I am. And this I am is not subject to change. So he says, thus, in the Shruti, Brahma bhavadi rupasya polasya shruyamanatvat, because of hearing of this pola, right? Because of recognizing this pola in the form of being Brahman. Being Brahman means all of these things. Being Brahman is the one crosses, it's the one who crosses sorrow, the one who crosses all papa, punya and papa, the one who is free from that hridya grantihi, the one who is amrita, the one who is immortal, that Brahman I am. That's the pola. It's a greater pola than the kingdom. Okay. So tat pola vanchaya, desiring to have that result, that pola, the pola of being Brahman, sakshi anusarane. There is pravartanam, the pravartanam, that impetus to follow in the footsteps of the sakshi, to follow the sakshi, right, is something which is appropriate. In other words, you're seeking knowledge, you're seeking to gain knowledge of Brahman, you're seeking to be Brahman through knowledge. Because there's a pola in it, there's a great pola in it. The pola is freedom from sorrow, the pola is freedom from death. The pola is freedom from all of the pairs of opposites. The pola is freedom, the absolute freedom of being, of the sat-chit-ananda which you are. And so the chit-abhasa, in recognizing the atma, wants to be there. It doesn't want this identification to be with something that exists within samsara. It wants its identification to be with that which is free. And so it has a motive for doing that. Not motive, it has an impetus for doing that. Just like the prince has an impetus for following in the footsteps of the king because he wants the kingdom. The mumukshu has an impetus, that ahankara, let's say that ahankara, has an impetus, something impels it to come to the self rather than to the upadis, because there's something very great to be gained in recognizing myself as Brahman. That's the idea. Okay, do one more. Devatva kama hyagnyadau, Devatva kama hyagnyadau, pravishanti yatatata, pravishanti yatatata, sakshitvena avaseshaya, sakshitvena avaseshaya, swavinasham savanchati, swavinasham chavanchati. This is kind of interesting. Devatva kamaha, he, agni adau, pravishanti yata, tata, sakshitvena avaseshaya, swavinasham savanchati. He says, let me just tell you the introduction to this. It's kind of a nice intro. He says, this is the doubt. In becoming Brahman, you know, he says, Brahma Bhava Prapta, in gaining, in that gain, the gain of being Brahman. So in that gain, through knowledge of Brahman, so through the knowledge of Brahman, in this gain of becoming Brahman, of being Brahman, chirabhasat tvameva vinashet. This chirabhasa, being the chirabhasa, the knower, the enjoyer, that reflection of consciousness, that would be destroyed. Now the chirabhasa would have to say, the ahankara would have to say, you know, the one identified with the mind, let's look at it, the one who's identified with the mind would have to say, I'm not real. I don't really exist. I'm not real. Right? The chirabhasa. It's only mitya. So it's like, I've always taken myself to be my mind. My mind and body, this is me. And now you're telling me that this me, the one who's talking here, is not me, is not real. The chirabhasa, the state of being the chirabhasa, is something that becomes destroyed. You can no longer say, I am the chidabhasa. Okay? This is the doubt. So therefore, he says, swavinashaya katam pravartate. He says, then, that being so, therefore, what would be the pravritti? What would be the impetus for him to destroy himself like this? Right? Because the chidabhasa is all of a sudden realizing, oops, I'm not real. What impetus would the chidabhasa have to negate himself like that? So that's the doubt. So therefore this verse. So he says in the verse, it says, just as there are devatva kamaha, people who desire to become devatas. Now, here we are in this plane of existence. You could have the desire to become a deva, to become one of the gods in one of the other planes of existence. And through doing rituals and whatnot and different austerities and upasanas, you're trying to accrue, you're a person who's trying to accrue the punya that's necessary to become one of these exalted beings within the creation. So you have, there's people who have this desire to become a devata. And so what do they do? Agni adau pravishanti yata. Just as these people will enter into the fire, or just kill themselves, they'll enter into the fire, or enter into the Ganga, destroying themselves, so that they can get a better body as a devata. Okay? Tata, similarly, similarly, that person, that chidabhasa, saha, vanchati, desires swavinasham, his own destruction, The Chidabhasa desires its own destruction. Why? Sakshitvena Avishesaya. For the sake of remaining in what is left over. That's what this Avishesha means, that which is left remaining as the Sakshi. So the Chidabhasa, it's really interesting. I mean, Vidyaranya's example is interesting. You know? The jiva is giving up its sharira so that it can get something better. That's why it does it. It goes into the fire or drowns itself in the Ganga after doing these rituals and upasas and whatnot in order to get a devata body. Now here the chidabhasa is also through jnanam destroying itself so that it can abide as what something which is superior, which is the Sakshi. So it's just interesting. I mean, actually, for people, where as this knowledge has taken place, there's often, as a person is exposed to this knowledge, one thing that can come up is a real fear of death. Well, the mind really revolts. Because, well, what about me? You know, I don't want to lose myself. I don't want to die. You know, it's really what it's saying is, I want to be Brahman. You know, I don't want to die. I want to be the one who is Brahman. But of course, what the person ends up realizing is, that's right, you are Brahman. Yourself is Brahman. You know, it's not the mithya, it's not the mithya words, or the mithya reflection of consciousness that is brought about because of the vritti that is you. You, in fact, are Brahman. And so the chidabhasa is willing to give up its false of the identity of being the self that, in fact, it never had. The chidabhasa never had the experience of being the self. It thought that it was the experience of being the self. Right? It thought it was that experience. But the experience of being the self only belongs to the self. It's like if I hold up a mirror to my face, you know, and my face in the mirror says, I am the face. I am the face. Right? And nobody can tell me that I am not that I am not me. Here's the reflection. Nobody can tell me I am not me. You know? But if you were to take the mirror away and the reflection goes away with the mirror, the one who is the self of the face is still there. Right? If you bring the mirror there, take the mirror away. So the chidabhasa is that mirror with the face in it, thinking that it is the face. You know, it is the conscious being. But it has nothing to do with the conscious being. The conscious being is its very self. And its very self is totally independent upon the ahankara saying, I am the self. You see what I mean? So, but it doesn't know that. And so, what has to happen, in fact, is very traumatic for it initially. It feels that it is, in a way, going to be committing suicide. Or that it's going to have to die. It's going to go through a death in the process of recognizing the self. And what actually happens is it recognizes that, in fact, it is free from the self is free from death. That the self, which is itself, is free from death. And that all of its thoughts, all of its feelings, all of its doership and enjoyership and all of that have for their being the self, which is free from the doership, the enjoyership, from all of the different thoughts that are going on in the mind. And so the chidabhasa then recognizes that itself is Brahman. So it recognizes that its very self is Brahman, and that it is really just a thought. It's a thought. Right? The ahankara is nothing but a thought. And then you start, like in contemplation, it's really nice to recognize that the thought, I am this, I am doing that, it's nothing but a thought. The self is not moving or doing anything as you're thinking that. The self is only abiding there, illumining the thought. The thought can be, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, I'm feeling this, I'm feeling that. The Atman is just there illumining it. So at some point, the Chittabhasa kind of realizes, I am only a thought. And then when it realizes I am only a thought, then it now identifies itself as being the I thought belonging to the Atma. It's an I thought that has for its truth me. And so now the Ahankara follows me. It always resolves into me. It sits in me. It recognizes that I, the Atma, have always been its truth. I have always, and like this, I, the Atma, which is Brahman, I am the self. The self experience is me, the Atma. Not me, the Chittabhasa. The Chittabhasa is what's a running commentary on the self experience, which is Brahman. The self experience, which is Brahman, is the truth of the Chittabhasa. But the self experience that makes me me belongs to Brahman. Me is Brahman. Not to the Chittabhasa, which is having a running commentary. See what I mean? And so now the Ahankara, which is the Chittabhasa in a sense, recognizes myself, the Atma. And so now its identification is with the Atma. It's imitating, following, relating to myself as the Atma, not to itself as the being, which has sense organs and thoughts and moods and emotions and a physical body. So it follows me, and I am always the same. Right? So the Chittabhasa, therefore, is always the same. So even in all of my experiences, the knower experiences, the Chittabhasa itself is focused on, as its identity, on that which is stable, the constant. In all of your experience, it's on the constant conscious being which I am. And so that's where the Chittabhasa becomes rooted, or is rooted. So it gives up its, as though it gives, it destroys itself as though destroys itself means what? What is destroyed is its notion that the self is itself. It has for it, this is the Satya Mitya. The Chittabhasa has for its truth the Atma. But the Atma, the self, is free of it. And so there's a transference of power, so to speak. Right? Transference of power. The Atma is released from the identification with the Chittabhasa by the Chittabhasa. And so the Chittabhasa loses its sense of I am the self, but gains the self, which it is in truth. See what I mean? Satyam Mitya. So. That's all I can do. One, two. I only got four, but I can't do another one. That's all right.
Yeah, that was helpful.
No, you have to think about it. I actually like what he's doing. I think it's really kind of nice. It's interesting.
Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.
When I think of the Brahmanas coming into contact with the Mleshas.
The Brahmana, yeah.
Cooties.
Yeah. We used to play that. You have cooties, you have cooties. Run, run.
So, Carol, how does Chidabhasa relate to the concept of the ahankara, and how does it relate to sakshi? I mean, what is the...
Here, the way that Vidyaranya is doing it is the sakshi is the atma. Okay? Then he's using the... Because usually if we use the word sakshi, it's a way of differentiating in the end the atma from everything that is illumined. And then what is left is the sakshi, which is no longer a sakshi. And so when he's talking about sakshi now, he's talking about sakshi, the atma, in reference to what is illumined. So he's using it as atma. So now, in reference to, so we have the sakshi as the atma. Then we have what is illumined, which would be, say, for instance, a vritti in the mind. The vritti in the mind, because it enjoys being known, we say chidabhasa. It reflects consciousness. Like, because it is known. Consciousness itself is not knowing anything. So the knowership, the knower known, only is from the standpoint of the vritti. See, because consciousness is not performing an act of knowing. So since now, so then the knower known has to belong to the vritti itself. So the chidabhasa is the reflection of consciousness in the vritti, the sat chit, which is always the same in every vritti. So that's why I bring up this Drikdrisha Viveka when he talks about the five components, sat chit ananda, and then that's three, and then namarupa. So the sat chit always is exactly the same. And then he deals with ananda later in the Drikdrisha. So just take set chit. And the set chit is always the same, but always the same in reference to the vritti. And so now the ahankara is going to always identify with the set chit in the vritti. But then it also identifies with the name and form. So you could say...
But that's erroneous.
It's erroneous.
So how does the ahankara then relate to the...
Because the ahankara recognizes itself as mithya. Because it also is illumined. The very ahankara is illumined. It's also mithya. And it recognizes, oh, I'm also illumined. I'm also changing. Right? And it recognizes that the sat chit, which it identifies with, is constant. Right? But that the names and forms that it takes on go on changing, and that they are objectified, objectifiable to it. And so it recognizes them as a chidabhasa. You know, I am the conscious existent being in the vritti. Then it recognizes itself as being illumined, as mithya.
Hold on a second, but yeah. if we say that, you know, the chidabhasa only really is there in relationship to the vritti, then what's the difference between the sakshi and that? Because sakshi ultimately doesn't exist or only exists in relationship to the vritti either.
No, there's something missing there. In terms of the sakshi, we label Brahman as the, or Atma, as the sakshi, only when we're doing the drik drisha viveka. Because in the end, you objectify the world, you objectify the body, the world becomes known, I'm the knower. Body becomes known, I'm the knower. Mind becomes known, I'm the knower, the sakshi, I'm the witness.
But that would be the same for the, what is it called again, shidabhasa?
But the difference is, yeah, but always in reference, this knowership is always in reference to the vritti, right? But when you remove the vrittis, then you realize that consciousness, that the knowership belongs to the vritti. There's no knowership in consciousness itself. And so the concept of the sakshi is then dropped. There is really no sakshi in terms of the atma. But the sakshi is a useful teaching tool.
I understand that. I still don't understand the difference then between sakshi and shidabhasa, because it seems like everything that...
There's no difference, really. Except that, because there's no... Because the knower, the thing is that that's exactly right. The knowership aspect falls. The sakshitvam falls.
So why don't we use two words? What is was my original question. What is the difference in the conceptualization that causes the Shruti to use two words as if
it's
there
because,
are two different concepts?
It's because when we're doing the drik drisha, there's the knower known, right? Atma is not a knower. Okay?
I understand that.
Okay, you understand it. But we need to, in the differentiation, you always, until the very end, you keep identifying yourself as the knower. Because in samsara,
I'm not asking why is there the concept of sakshi at all. I'm saying is what is the difference between the concept of the sakshi and the concept of the shidabhasa? That's the question.
Oh, I see. Well, the word sakshi is used especially in drik drisha viveka as a word for differentiating knower known. Chidabhasa is being used as all of the vrittis, every vritti reflects consciousness. That's literally what it means, reflection of consciousness. So it's being used in a different...
Isn't that what sakshi means?
No, sakshi means witness. Chidabhasa, chid means consciousness, abhasa means reflection.
But that's just the two different ways of saying the same thing.
Yeah, but we have lots of ways of saying the same thing. We're pointing at the same thing in different ways. So when we're using the word sakshi, we're using it in terms of witness to differentiate knower known. When we're using chidabhasa, we're looking at the fact that every vritti reflects consciousness. Right? And so when the ahankara is going to identify with the consciousness, so why would I want to use chidabhasa when I'm trying to do a see or seeing differentiation? I want to use chidabhasa when I'm talking about another aspect, make you understand something else, that every vritti that you have enjoys consciousness and existence. The consciousness and existence is stable, but it's always there in reference to the vritti. And so you can take, because it's always there in reference to the vritti, you can take it to belong to the vritti. It can be identified with the vritti, which we do with the ahankara. That's what we do.
So with the sakshi and the drik drisha, it's kind of like almost like a separating. And then with this chidabhasa, in a sense, it's kind of pulling it together in a different way.
Not exactly, but the first part I agree completely.
Yeah.
It's making that viveka.
Right.
The
right.
Sakshi is used as a tool for viveka, and then the sakshi is resolved into chaitanya, into awareness.
Yeah.
The chidabhasa is looking at how every thought that you have right, reflects consciousness, existence. See, like if you go through and I say, this is known, this is known, this is known, everything in Maya, in fact, say just from, not from Ishwara, but from the experience of the Jiva, every vritti that you have is pervaded by sat and chit. Mm-hmm. So every object that we call the maya upadhi, everything, you know, enjoys this sat chit. And so because it enjoys sat chit, you can take the sat chit to belong to it. Right. To it. Like say just take sat. Swamiji likes to work with just sat alone. Here this enjoys sat. Right? It exists. This exists. This exists. Everything that you have in your experience enjoys existence. So that's the chitab. Everything in your experience, every vritti enjoys that sat chit. And so now you would say you have a vritti, and in the vritti, you say, I'm like, I have a vritti of this painting here. Just the painting. I have a vritti of the painting. Then there's different aspects, there's different components to this vritti. There's the sat chit and the name and form. So now, the sat chit in reference to the name and form will be, the painting exists, the painting is known. That's how the sat chit gets translated in terms of the object. The painting is known. Now, how does the sat chit get translated in terms of the ahankara, in terms of me? I am, I know. It's the same consciousness. From the standpoint of the ahankara, I am, I exist, and then I am the conscious being. Right? From the standpoint of the name and form, it is, and it is known. Actually, all that is there is sat chit plus name and form. But because we have the chitabhasa allows for this to take place.
So then actually it's more like a sense of differentiating in terms of the actual vritti rather than making the subject object. Within the vritti you're making that satyamitya kind of thing.
Well, in the vritti, you're seeing how you can have the knower known. The ahankara identifies with the sat chit as I am, I know. The ahankara identifies, and then you identify the objects, what you know, in terms of it is and is known. Once I say, I know, the ahankara says, I am the knower, I am the knower, that's the am is the sat, and the knower is the consciousness, then the object of the vritti becomes existent and known. It's just language.
So it's kind of like in the
vritti. Amness, isness,
right.
Knower, known.
But they're really the same thing. Mm-hmm.
That's right. And there's the chitabhasa that allows for that.
Well,
so then when the mind differentiates the sat-chit from the vritti, so it identifies with the sat-chit, then you're dying to the limited self and gaining the power of limitlessness, so you become the infinite or Brahman.
Yeah, you recognize yourself as Brahman. You recognize that this knower known belongs to the vritti, but that the consciousness is only one. And in fact, in your experience, you know, and we do this one, the wall is known, the space is known, the body is known, the sense organs are known, the mind is known, the emotions are known, the ahankara is known, there is nothing that's not known. That knownness is consciousness. There is no knower known. In your experience, there is only known, there is only consciousness. And then you see how this illusion takes place because of the chitabhasa and the ahankara identifying with the sat chit as amness and knower. I am a knower. And identifying the things that are not me you know, in reference to the, all the upadis that I've taken to be my, me, those things that are not me, then they exist and they are known. They're just different ways of labeling consciousness.
Is there a big rift or a fine line between identifying with Atma in every thought and dissociation? Is there a big difference between them?
What do you mean by dissociation?
Dissociation, like when you're in painful experience and you just, you don't think. There's a separation from the mind, right? In terms of you get a distance from whatever. Let's say there was an abuse or something that so it separates the person.
Yeah, that's different. That dissociation, that's a psychological term, and it means that the person's mind is actually dissociating from a given experience. Or it's pulling away from a given experience.
But identifying with the Atma.
But this doesn't have to do anything with identifying with the Atma. It'll go into some mental mode. It's not going
right.
Outside of the mind.
Right, but okay, let's say identifying with Atma. How is there any similarity with dissociation at all in terms of even though this is the mind, the world exists in the mind and it's existing this way, this is Ishvara, I'm Atma, I'm the stable one. Is there any closeness or any similarity to dissociation?
Not in my mind. I mm-hmm. think that in maybe from a more yogic perspective, if you're looking at in terms of withdrawing the mind from the prakriti, in yoga, in to have a samadhi experience or a non-dual experience or something like that, since you're viewing it as an experience, you can look at it as dissociation, but not in a negative sense. But now here, there doesn't need to be any kind of dissociation in recognizing the satyamitya. You don't need dissociation because you are changeless in the midst of this. You don't have to go anywhere. Your mind doesn't have to go anywhere in order to recognize it. The ignorance has been removed, so that's the fact. In fact, the constancy of your being fills the experience. So you don't have to run away or dissociate from the experience to recognize the stability of yourself in the experience.
But it seems that in meditation, when there are long periods without thinking or a lot, not minimal chatter, and there's more identification with the silence of my own being or such shit. And
yeah, but then what you're doing is trying to bring your mind, your body and mind to a state of quiescence, of relaxation, slowing everything down so that your mind can be with yourself.
It's more of a practice. Whereas realizing oneself as Brahman doesn't require effort.
It doesn't require effort, but that practice is useful. Mm-hmm. It's what we call nididhyasana because the mind has beginningless lifetimes of association with what it is not, identification with what it is not. And so by slowing things down and being able to just sit in your knowledge, to sit with yourself, with your own being, then the mind, you know, gets a chance to have, in a sense, different samskaras to recognize myself rather than be identified with myself. I recognize myself rather than taking itself to be me. It recognizes that satyamitya. You know, you give the mind a chance. That's why nididhyasana is good. You give the mind a chance to be with your knowledge.
It's this I notion, once it recognizes the truth of itself, being Brahman, you said that the I thought remains with the upadis as long as the upadis are still there. How does that I thought differ from the I notion? The I notion still has ignorance, but is there an experiential difference?
Well, there's an experiential difference in the sense that for the ahankara, that's called that has knowledge, that ahankara is still there, right? So it's still there, functioning as, you know, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. But that mind, that buddhi, knows what you're talking about, because it recognizes the atma, which isn't doing anything. And so the ahankara is just something functional, as long as you have an upadhi. But for an ajnani, then that ahankara is real. If I say I am the body, that's because I am the body.
Okay.
You know? If I am my mind, I am my thoughts, because I am my mind, I am my thoughts. There's no viveka. There's no recognition of myself as being free of that, of being stable. And so for the jnani, the ahankara is still there, but it doesn't disturb your knowledge. It's just practical communication.
So, can I ask clarification about this? So the chittabhasa is the reflection of consciousness in the mind. Then when you break it into these five parts, so the chittabhasa is the sat-chit. Is that right? Chittabhasa is the sat-chit, and the other part of the thought is the nama-rupa.
No, say it like, look like this.
Okay.
If you have a thought, the thought has, in the thought are all of these components.
Mm-hmm.
The thought exists, the thought is known, and it has whatever its content is in terms of name and form.
Yeah.
Okay? So that means that the vritti itself enjoys this sat-chit. Mm-hmm. That sat-chit, which the vritti naturally enjoys because it's sattva, is the chittabhasa.
Okay.
That it enjoys set chit, makes it a chittabhasa. Now, the chittabhasa, means that there's a reflection of consciousness there in the vritti. That's the chittabhasa.
Mm-hmm.
Now, who will the ahankara identify with in the vritti? The set chit.
Mm-hmm.
But then, the vritti also enjoys names and forms, and so if the vritti can also, the names and forms can also be identified with, perhaps. Like, for instance, I can identify, I would say, with a mood. I am unhappy. So the sat-chit plus identification with the mood. I can identify with the sat-chit plus the physical body. I am the body. So these are identifications that are what we call upadhis. But then the vritti can also be of a painting.
Yeah.
There's no identification there.
Right.
And so then we label it differently.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It doesn't get the I am.
Yeah.
It gets the it is.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then as you sit with your experience for a while, just the me, just your own sense of self, you recognize it is self-evident, self-luminous. I am not doing anything, and there's nothing away from me in my experience. I'm not contained. The me, myself, is not contained. It's not existing in my body or outside of my body. It's not in or out, but it's the center of the totality of my experience. You're me. You're not contained at all. You just have to sit quietly for a minute just to recognize that.
So, because it's so obvious that meanness is born from the body or born from the mind.
That's what you think, but if you sit a little bit, for be a little quiet, you'll see that isn't true.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That the me is not contained at all. You could say everything is contained in it if you want, but it's not contained in anything.
That's a surprise.
It is a surprise.
Yeah.
But it's true. Or it just has to be pointed out. You can recognize your experience.
Yeah,
like you just slow down a little bit.
Can you use those words again? It's a surprise when the mind recognizes that it's not the container for the body, or the body is not the container for I guess. Huh?
Say that the I is the container for everything.
Right, but what does it what is the surprise? What is the smell?
I think Edward said it's a surprise to think, because you think that I am the body. Right, so the body contains me.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Or the body produces me. Or
it produces me, contains me. This is me here.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's this free-floating me. You know? I mean.
But it's not free-floating. It's not floating around like this.
Yeah.
The me is stable. It's Brahman. There is, so there's no, it's very strong. It's not moving anywhere. Mm. But there's nothing away from it. You're just not, you're not contained anywhere. But it's not like you're free floating.
The thing that always seems to catch me up is that somehow is that this can only be known because of the mind.
Well,
right?
Yes and no. Mm-hmm. It is self-evident, so it doesn't require the mind.
No.
Okay. It's not a product. It's the experience, self-experience. If the mind is not here, it's irrelevant. The self experience is irrelevant. It doesn't. The mind is irrelevant to it. It doesn't need the mind.
But how would we? So how would we sort of know that? Because.
Well, but this is like. You don't have to. The mind doesn't have to know it.
Uh-huh.
If the mind is not there, who cares? The mind. We don't need a commentary.
Uh-huh.
We don't need the mind commenting on my being. For me to be. Like if I don't have to say, somebody doesn't have to come and say, well, look at, you are there. There you are. What does that have to do with your being there? Absolutely nothing. Okay. So, but now, it is the mind that is suffering from ignorance that needs to know. Because that knowledge makes a difference. As Vidyaranya is saying, you know, it makes a huge difference. For the Ahankara to recognize this. Because if the Ahankara doesn't recognize it, then it takes itself to be this limited being, always identified with the mind, always seeking happiness, seeking to become full, trying to manipulate the world so that I can get what my needs, so I can fulfill my needs. All of the samsara, it's liberated from. So it's important for the mind to get that.
Mm-hmm.
So the mitya mind, you know, needs mitya, it has mitya bondage, needs mitya moksha.
Mm-hmm.
Atma doesn't need moksha.
Mm-hmm.
Atma's fine. But then the ahankara recognizes, oh, I'm fine. When it recognizes that I am the Atma. You see? That I am the Atma, but the Atma is free of me. That's what the mind realizes. The mind realizes I am the self, because there is no other self, but the self, me, am free of the mind. The Ahankara realizes I am the self, but the self is free of me. I'm just, you know,
well,
a label.
But when it says I am the self, then...
But the self is not me. That's the Satya Mitya.
Right. But when it realizes I am the self, I guess then it realizes, like, well, like you say, it has the self for itself. I mean, it's, yeah.
Well, it's like the pot realizes, yeah. I am the clay, but the clay is free of me.
Right.
I recognize that the Ahankara recognizes I am the Atma because that is its truth.
Uh-huh, yeah.
But the Atma is free of me.
Yeah.
Because I'm just a thought. The I is just a thought.
I have a clarification question. So in the introduction it says, those that are interested in becoming devis or devatas do the rituals, throw themselves into the fire or the Ganges. But what does the mumuksha have to gain? What does the... And at that point I thought maybe this shidhabhasa could be translated as something like sense of self, and if it once it sees the truth, it resolves just like the sakshi resolves, but it has sort of that.
Yeah, it realizes that the sense of self is not dependent on it, and it thought that it was. It thought that the sense of self belonged to it, to the vritti. But the sense of self doesn't belong to the vritti. Mm-hmm. The sense of self belongs to the Atma. Yeah.